There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska named three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
If the fans can hang in this, so can we.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org. Consequence and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thank you for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out. Three a week, in fact, a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts from. Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating, leave a review. Those always help out so much. We've had some great guests on lately, including Susanna Hoffs of the Bengals, who is just here, Adele, Hank Azaria, one of the many voices on The Simpsons, and his great movie career. He's also fronting a Bruce Springsteen tribute band these days. We talk with the casts from Citadel Honey Bunny and Citadel Diana. Suzanne Vega was here, Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, Sting, Kate Siegel from The Haunting of Hill House and Midnight Mass. We had Kelsey Asbel and Finn Wittrock from Don't Move on Netflix, John Cleese of Monty Python, Black Francis from The Pixies, the cast of Shrinking. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, catching up with Maren Morris. In fact, we recorded this backstage at the Bourbon and Beyond Festival in Louisville, Kentucky, to talk about her Intermission EP. It was her first release since her shift away from the country genre. She described it as a teaser and a reflective break in her journey. We got to discuss the strong presence of women in music this year and Morris's excitement for the fierce Grammy competition ahead. She also shared a memorable moment reaching out to Dolly Parton over a melody that echoed 9 to 5, with Dolly graciously doing the Dolly Parton thing and declining any royalties. I asked her about the song I Hope I Never Fall in Love. It's my favorites on a new EP. And talking about the intensity of her vocal delivery in that. So all that and more as we talk Intermission and big life changes. Live from backstage at Bourbon and Beyond, it's Kyle Meredith with Maren Morris.
Hello.
Hi.
It's great to see you. We were just saying, we got to do this once over the old Zoom thing right after Humble Quest.
Yeah, which, wow. Ooh, that was a long time ago.
So a few things have happened
since
then.
Mm-hmm.
First off, like Intermission, I'm going to ask about that in a minute. It's so good. And just seeing like how much one artist can evolve and change and try new things just in this small amount of time. I don't mean this as general questions like, hey, what's up? But like, how is life now? Because like so much has happened. You made big announcements about everything. Like since last year, like how actual difference has life been?
Yeah, pretty much 180'd everything, I think, top down. I read a quote the other day that it was like, you're going to have to sacrifice your old life to get to your new one. And I think that's very true. In every sense of the word is like, you can't really cherry pick the parts of it that you're going to change. I think it's just sort of like cellular turnover at every phase. So it's been good. Like I'm writing a ton. It's been amazing to have these shows in between and like obviously love festival season. This is incredible, incredible lineup to be on today.
It's a good lineup out there.
I know. Kicking it off today.
Do you get to see any, like, I don't know. It's like 100 degrees outside right now and you're dressed immaculately, but.
Yeah, I was like, this might have been a mistake. Yeah. We're going to find out.
Yeah, so it's like you have to make the decision to like, do I even want to walk out there to see a show?
I resigned myself to the fact that like I'm going to be like Ross from Friends in these pants and like it's going to be a double shower day. Just is what it is.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I understand.
Louisville. Yeah. It's hot in the summer.
Yeah. So you did. You made this intermission EP and it's after an announcement like you're kind of leaving country behind. So when did these songs get written? I mean, when did you start? Because again, when you hit the big reset button that you've talked about, like, do the songs predate that a little bit, or do they all this start happening afterward?
Most of it happened after I sort of made some big career and personal life shifts. But there's one song on the EP called Because of Course, and I wrote that last summer. So that's the oldest one of the bunch, and I wrote that about the love that I have for my son. So that was like just that held on through all the changes in my life. Obviously, that's an eternal, unconditional love that I'll always have is for him. And he's been like such a constant in my life the last year. And as I've written these songs and articulated my emotions more and more, the picture is a little bit more clear than it was a year ago. And these songs, I mean, I obviously am working towards a full record, but it was just nice, like, while I did this tour this summer and these last few festivals, just to have some new music out. I wanted to, I had a lot to say, but I think, like, it's like, do you wait till there's a full record done, or do you just, like, get it out as you're feeling and thinking it? Yeah. So I think I was happy to put it out right now, and it's nice to, like, kind of, for our set list, to have some, like, new blood.
Well, Chris, in playing around even with that title, I mean, it seems like that title can say so much in a moment like this, but it's the duality, right? Because it's the intermission between albums,
yeah,
certainly, but it's like, it also feels like the next chapter. It's like, how is it a new chapter and intermission at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, intermission to me is like a break in the act, so there's obviously more to come, but I think this was a nice sort of appetizer teaser of music. And I'm still writing, and I have a few more like writing trips to LA this fall just to sort of like see what is left in the gun. Mm-hmm. But I've written so much for this project that I'm excited to get it out. And it just feels like there's no deadline or like rush, but I certainly, you know, want to, I feel like at the end of the day, I'm still like an album girl. I love full bodies of work.
Absolutely.
Obviously, this summer it's been an insane year of albums. Like,
it's a big year
from
this
women.
I mean, it's one of the biggest. Like someone said, like of this decade, this might be like the biggest year we've had so far. Like, and the best, not just like big names, but like it's so quality.
I know. Yeah, it's like really inspiring for me as a writer and just a woman in this industry. But like, I think that it's going to be a bloodbath at the Grammys this year.
We already got a little bit of that at the VMAs. I mean, everybody seemed not very nice to each other, but like, it's just like you could start seeing who's up, you know, music-wise against
each
other.
The quality is just there, and that's so encouraging, especially when so much in the music industry is sort of like not hopeless, but you know, with people not making as much money touring or streaming or writing. I think, like, in terms of women in pop just dominating right now, it makes me excited to, like, get back in the room and, like, really hone in on what I want to say. And I think that's, like, what makes me excited to always write songs, is that when I'm inspired by my friends Because I'm inspired by my life, of course. Like, you have to fill the well of memories and content of what you're going to write about. But I always get the most excited since I moved to Nashville 10 years ago, like, by my friend's songs.
Do you ever, because I'm guessing you listen to all these women and everybody else, but do you ever get to the point where it's like, that sounds so much like one of their songs, do I have to let them know that? Because I was listening to another interview recently, mm-hmm. and the artist was going through that same thing. It's like, I wrote something and I realized, oh, that sounds just like, you know, Sonic Youth was who it was.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, I've got to hit them up and make sure that that's okay if I release this song. Because that's what you listen to. You listen to, you know.
No, that's happened, you know, not too often in my career. And I feel like that's always something as, you know, a working writer that I've tried to be really cognizant of. Because it's like, you do listen to so much music, mm-hmm. and it gets in there. And, you know, there's only so many chords and, you know, structures. So, but I had that happen to me once. It was like on my second album, Girl, I realized one of my songs was like, we had already turned everything in and mixed and mastered the album. Like, it was coming out in 2 months. And I kind of realized like a melody of one of my songs was on top of Dolly Parton's 9 to 5. And I was just, you know, like a little bit freaked out and heartbroken because I would never want to like copy someone mm-hmm. on purpose. But it was just this sort of stair step melody. And so I reached out to her. And she was so cool about it. She, like, wrote me a letter back. And she, because I offered her, you know, a percentage of the publishing. Because I was like, I'm pretty sure this is close enough to your melody that you should take some of this. And she was like, absolutely not. So
very Dolly.
That was so cool of her. I know. I was like, and obviously she's Dolly, so she doesn't need it. But I was, you know, I think writer to writer, there is just, like, a fear and a respect level of, like, you never want to copy your friends. You only want to be inspired by them. But yeah, that's a good question.
One of the songs, very quickly, because I hope I never fall in love, is so incredible.
Thank you.
And your vocals, like in the studio, the vocal booth or whatever. I don't know, man. What are you going through right there? Like, are you the type that needs to, like an actor?
Yeah.
That's what I mean. Like, do you have to put yourself, because that emotion coming through that song, we talk about, you know, the best songs of the year, and that's got to be one of them.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Thank you. Yeah, I think that was one of those takes vocally that I, particularly in the bridge, because when I'm screaming, like, you only made it worse. I hope I never fall in love. Like, I'm definitely reaching maximum velocity on my vocal cords because it needed that grit and, like, desperation and anger almost, and just, you know, letting it all out. I have to, like, be careful live, you know, to not always blow it out every night. But for the, you know, something that's permanent, like a piece of work of recording, you definitely want to, like, give it your all, because it's forever eternalized there. So yeah, it's definitely vocally a stretch for me. And but that's what's fun, is like the range as you age, especially for women singers, matures and just gets even more rich and like chocolatey as you get older. And I think like it sort of is this age range, like I'm 34, but I think it's like between 34 and 42 or something with women, where they're at their vocal maturity.
I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I hope so.
No, that's cool. Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, I think just like still figuring out like what you can do and the differences as you age is like a fun thing about being a singer.
That's cool. I remember I asked a couple of classic rockers, Sammy Hagar, and Bono, and if you regret any vocals that you did when you were younger, they're like, absolutely.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad I did them then. Can't do them now, but I'm so glad I did them then. Yeah.
I've had moments where I've like recorded or I've written a song way too low, because like in your speaking voice as you're writing in the room with your friends, you're writing it as you're saying it. You're not really thinking about singing it for decades, you know. And I'll be like, oh God, we should have raised the key on this one or lowered the key.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. I can't wait to hear what comes next, because you've always kept us on our toes and made such great music. This new EP is so good. Maren, thank you so much for dropping by.
Yeah, nice to see you in person.
By. Yeah.
Yeah, right nice on. And right. the air conditioning. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm going to look a lot different after this show.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith. Now, I'm also going to include Mina Maris's last conversation. We did this one in 2022, just as she had released the album Humble Quest, how it told her story of her road to success and a whole lot more. And it's just interesting to hear about this and then know all of her life changes afterwards. So that's why we're including this here. Part 2 of Kyle Meredith with Maren Morris.
Hi, it's good to be here virtually.
It's a pleasure to have you here too. And I'm not kidding. This album is just drilled into me, and I can't seem to get enough of it. Just what a great adventure, a beautiful album. I mean, all the compliments.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I'm just so happy it's out, and the reception has been, I mean, it's bowled me over how warm and positive it's been. I mean, I don't know what I was expecting, but it's always scary putting something that's so, you know, vulnerable and private out, and then to have it be related to on such a massive macro level is very humbling.
That's always been something that, you know, you hear of the two sort of train of thoughts as far as songwriting. Like, do you just make it so universal that everybody can relate, or do you make it personal? For me, I think I've always related when it's the very specific personal story more than, you know, the big grand gesture for some, like, it's your life, but I see, you know, my parts in it as well.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's why I've always gravitated towards country storytelling, is because, and I'm kind of more referencing the 60s and 70s country storytelling more so than modern, but because I do think that there's this, just having been a working songwriter on Music Row here in Nashville, there is that anxiety of it not being relatable enough, you know, for the old ladies in Akron, Ohio, or you just worry about it not translating. And I feel like when people are really specific and vulnerable about their story, and when they're just talking about something so specific, I feel like that's more honestly inviting in a group of people than trying to so earnestly make it relatable to the millions.
I mean, some of my favorite songs, I think I use the example a lot of, like, U2 with Pride in the Name of Love. I mean, those verses, Monday morning, April 4, shots ring, you know, like, that's telling such a small moment in time, and makes the songs for it, like those. And I'll pull this into your record here too, because we start off with the story, with a very specific story, with Circles Around This Town. So it's not just a great story, but it is the story of you getting to here. Why was this moment in time the right moment to finally tell this one?
I think it's so interesting we're talking about this, because I remember having that seize up, like, oh, do I get this specific in this song? I mean, I'm name dropping past singles of mine in the second verse, with My Church and 80s Mercedes. And yeah, I think the voice in the back of my head that's like, yeah, people are not gonna relate to this at all, because this is way too much about your story. But I was like, I don't care. I think that it would be a fun exercise to just talk about the shitty car that I had coming here 10 years ago almost, and no AC, terrible demos, thinking that I was gonna just blow people's minds with my talent, and then immediately getting checked and knowing that, like, everyone in this town is talented and you need to get in line. And so I think that I just loved going there, and it ended up being such a favorite of mine listening back when I got the demo back, that I wanted it to be the first single. So it's been cool to see the reception of that song being inspiring to people that aren't even songwriters, because it is specifically, you know, it's almost my love letter to Nashville, the songwriting community. But I feel like whether you're a writer or a painter or a mechanic or whatever you do, everyone's got a dream or a daydream that they're chasing down in their head or what have you. But I think that it's just about that hustle of figuring out your place in a very competitive world. But it's like you're competing with yourself.
And to get to that line, you know, at the end of the verse where you said, thank God I was an optimist, you know, that's the importance of what youth and naivety right there. And it'll get you to the door.
Yeah, that, like, weird sense of arrogance meets confidence meets, yeah, complete ignorance. It's like, it's the best thing about youth, is that you think that you can do anything because there's no bar set yet.
By the way, speaking of youth, I meant to say happy birthday, because I think that was just a couple days ago, right?
Yeah, thank you. 32. Yep.
That's in my rear view now, but I'm sure it was a good one.
Yeah, I was working on my actual birthday, but we're going to go to the John Mayer concert tonight and go to dinner. And that'll be my kind of belated birthday evening.
Not a bad way to spend it with Mayer on stage.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So you've talked about, you know, going into the record, I think the words you use was sort of a weird, depressing time, pandemic and everything that was going on in your lives and in all of our lives. I think that's why I found it kind of immediately surprising how much poetic love there is across this record, because there seems to be a lot of that on there. Although there was a sadder album before this. Is that the right way to ask that?
Yeah, there were definitely sadder songs that I intentionally left off this project because I was getting into that really jaded place of it feeling that like there's no point, especially early 2020 when everything shut down and all touring got wiped out. It just felt so forced to try to Zoom co-write, and you know, it was like, what is the point right now of writing songs if we can't play them out in public? And so I was, yeah, just kind of feeling sorry for myself and going through, you know, postpartum and just kind of feeling purposeless for the first time. And also trying to fit into my new role of motherhood. And I was writing some really depressing music around then. I mean, I'm glad that I made myself sit down and do it, but yeah, I mean, it was definitely a weird time of feeling like, does the world really need another fucking sad song right now? It just didn't feel like an appropriate way of putting that energy out. And so I just gave myself the time to wait and wait it out. And you know, the great thing about writing is that even if the songs aren't good, it's like it's still therapeutic. So even if the world never hears some of those really depressing songs I was writing, I got it out, but I definitely wanted to bathe in the sunshine on this record because it was a practice. Not every day. I think it was Jack White in, I forget the name of the documentary, but it was like him and The Edge from YouTube. Oh,
It Might Get Loud.
It Might Get Loud. It was either that or the White Stripes documentary, but he was talking about writing. And he just said, you know, not every day the skies are going to open up and this like sunshine is going to beam down on you and you're going to get this moment of inspiration and get this brilliant song. Sometimes you just have to sit down, like sit your ass in the room and like make it happen. And it's a practice. And so I feel like I gave myself the time to do that. And eventually, like a muscle that's being used and worked, it gets stronger. And I found my kind of footing again on how to even approach a third album. So yeah, anywho, that kind of went off on a weird tangent, but yeah.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Maren Morris. Like there's one song I think in particular, it's like you still pull a little bit of that, what you were going through into what you ended up. And that's it in the song Background Music, because here's a beautiful sentiment with a little macabre background going on. Like there's a little bit of darkness in there. I mean, the way I think I wrote it down, it's sort of looking at us once we're gone, considering that, you know, we're not going to be here and what we're left with. I think I'm trying to compliment you, and you painted that in the most beautiful way possible. Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, it's like even when I'm being romantic, I'm still being very morbid. But I love it. I think that that's real. I think because my husband and I are both artists and we're both songwriters and we tour and we do the same thing. I think that we're also really competitive, not with each other, but just with ourselves. And, you know, he's had a handful of number ones and so have I. And I think when everything stopped in COVID, we both were just laughing because we were like, wow, we really thought we had control over our destinies and we just don't. And it's a 10-year town is the saying in Nashville. And we were like, just, I think one night on our porch drinking wine and talking about what if in like 20 years, like, we're just retired and we're old has-beens and no one gives a shit anymore. But we still have each other and we have those good old days in our minds, but ultimately, like, our value within each other and the way that we love each other is not placed within the success stories of our songs. It's like each other. And so I think that's how background music came to be. It was my way of saying, I love what we do, but, you know, in 100 years, we're not going to be around. And maybe these songs that we wrote in our heyday might stick around. Maybe in the flying cars of the future, it will, you know, pop on to someone's radio station. But I don't know. It felt like a weird romantic way of saying, I love you. And I'll be there even, you know, after we're dead, because we're immortalized in our songs.
You just remember also, there's always Branson, Missouri, you know, once the Nashville sunset yeah. has happened.
Yeah.
You know, I've actually brought this up in the interviews before, the immortalization of music. There's a thing I learned last year that once your voice is on the radio, once you're projected out on radio airwaves, it never stops traveling through the universe. Like, the radio wave never dies. So your songs literally will last forever as long as the universe exists.
I love how trippy that is.
My favorite song on this album, I think today at least, is The Furthest Thing. The harmonies in that, I was instantly finding myself trying to sing along to it before I'd even finished the song for the first time. In the same way, I remember doing that with Alison Krauss's Baby, Now That I Found You, and it sort of reminded me a little bit of that right there. And it just, the song, like, it tiptoes along without ever feeling stagnant. And again, I think I'm just throwing the broad question out, like, where did this one come from? Because I absolutely love it.
Oh, thank you. It's actually one of my favorites on this project as well, just because it's so not something that I've visited in prior work of mine. And I think it was just not trying too hard. We wrote it in early 2021 when Ryan, my husband, and I went to Hawaii to work with Greg Kirsten. And that was kind of where he was quarantining with his family, and not a bad place to be for the year. But we just went out there for a month and we're writing a bunch with him in his little kind of makeshift studio in Hawaii. And I had that title written down in my phone for, I think, a few days. I didn't know what it meant, but I sort of liked the double entendre of saying, you know, as touring musicians, just we're constantly, you know, FaceTiming and having to connect just after shows on the phone. And it can be really lonely, you know, when we're doing this thing we love, it's still at times really lonely. And it's work to make a relationship happen and thrive within, you know, literal thousands of miles away from each other. So the furthest thing, like, you are quite literally the furthest thing away from me right now. Like, I'm in, you know, Brazil and you're in Nashville and we're trying to figure out time zones. And then also the line about, it's crazy how we thought by now we would have it figured out, like, but we're the furthest thing from that. And I don't know, just Greg was creating this really beautiful, lush, plucky guitar thing. I can't really describe it because it's just Greg's brain works in mysterious ways, but it was just such a comforting song. And I don't know, I listened to it back when he sent me a bunch of mixes when I got back to Nashville, and that was sort of a slow burner song to me because I instantly forget songs the second I'm done writing them, because it's kind of like it just comes into your brain for a few hours and then it leaves and it clears out for the next one. But when I listened to the demo of The Furthest Thing, I was really struck with emotion and I was like, holy shit, like, where did this come from? And I was like, well, that's definitely getting recorded. So
I'm so happy you did. Again, it's such a great song. And I could go on about so many songs on this record. I know still upcoming, you got the tour too. I'm looking forward to that because not only hearing these songs live, but you've got some of my favorite other artists opening, like The Lone Bellow and Joy Ladekin on there. I mean, I'm hoping, like, we played the crap out of the High Women album when it came out around here too. So if those opportunities come up, You know, are you going to take those? Like, what's next for the High Women? Because you got one great album. I mean, tell me there's going to be more.
Yeah, we always joke, like, especially me and Natalie Hemby, we're like, do we just Thelma and Louise it now? If we had this, you know, fun of a first project, like, let's go out on a high note. I just saw Amanda and Brandy at the Grammys a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, it's like, it's so hard with everyone being like kind of living far apart. Brandy's in, you know, Washington and we're in Nashville, but we also all released solo projects within the last year. So I think we're just kind of at this moment devoting our energy to that, but we're on a big group thread and we always talk about like sending each other new songs that we're excited about that could potentially go in the pot for High Women too. But yeah, I think we're just keeping in touch and like we're sisters for life no matter what. But I would love to get back in the studio with them and Dave Cobb. Like it was just such a dream day or week of being in the studio with all these women, with Yola, with Sheryl Crow, like playing bass. It was unreal. So yeah, I will be down the second we can all get our schedules aligned.
It is amazing that all of your records came out all around sort of the same time, or at least within a year. And every single one of them, I think, is fantastic. Like the group that you all put together is just incredible musicianship. You know, how well you work together, but obviously how well you work alone.
Yeah. Well, I think that's why it worked, was because we were all coming from such different worlds. I mean, Natalie being more of a music row songwriter, even though she's been on so many different projects that are outside of country music. I mean, like the Star is Born soundtrack, Labyrinth, she was always just really comfortable wearing the writer hat. She didn't want to be an artist. And then Brandy, obviously being this Americana darling for the last 20 years, I feel like. And then Amanda having such a fun and like imagery based lyricism and quirk, and like Jason Isbell, like that, we all were doing our own things so well. And I think we all respected each other from afar. And then coming together for the High Women, we all just showed each other, like not even in a judgmental way, like we really didn't know what you had gone through. Like you not judging the book by its cover, but maybe the, you know, I feel like Americana and country music as a mainstream are sometimes at odds with each other. I don't know why I'm talking about this now, but it's like, I feel like in some ways, rightfully so, people look down on mainstream country music as being, you know, sellout or cheesy, or, you know, we've lost touch with our roots, with our original outlaws. But I think, I don't know, like, I feel like me and Kacey Musgraves, Miranda Lambert, you know, Stapleton, Eric Church, like there are these artists that are really, like we're really solid in country music, but we also can kind of do whatever we want. And I think there's just a respect that I got from the High Women about, you know, being able to live in both worlds comfortably, because music is music. It doesn't matter. Like the genre label it has or the venue size you're in.
A lot of artists that I absolutely love right there. That's a pretty great company to be in, along with yourself. And Maren, I cannot compliment you enough on Humble Quest. It is a perfect record. So thank you so much for doing what you do. And thank you so much for taking the time to talk about it.
Thank you. That was so fun. Sorry for my very long-winded answers.
Those are my favorites. So
I'm over-caffeinated. That's the issue.
Awesome. We'll see you out there on the tour. And again, it was great talking to you. Thank you.
You too. Thanks, Kyle.
And my thanks to Maren Morris. Intermission is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button while you're hanging around so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out every single week. A new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at Spotify, at Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe. Kyle Meredith with. Don't forget to give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music, bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from Dolly Parton, NRBQ, The DBs, Soccer Mommy, Cheap Trick, Faces, Paul Simon, Pink Floyd, Shudder to Think, Liz Phair, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Vagabond, Logic 1000, Goldfrapp, Laura Marling, Wilco, Mark Cohn, Pete Yorn, Joni Mitchell, and my interview with James Bay to talk about his latest album. That's what you can hear weeknights when you tune in at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.